Hi, and welcome to a new edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballinger, and it's great to have you with us on this Friday, February 23rd, 2018. You can get a hold of me via social media at Ryan Ballinger on Twitter, and you can find Golf Newsnet on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf Newsnet. Find all of our work at golfnewsnet.com, and you can download our TV apps for Roku and Amazon Fire TV. And we are presented by ShipStix. ShipStix is the premium white glove golf club, golf bag, and luggage, for that matter. And they actually do skis, but that's a separate service. Delivery service. ShipStix will help you take the hassle out of traveling with your golf clubs so that you don't have to take them to the airport, to the check-in counter, pay God knows what for them to be disrespected every step of the way, and then hope that they make their way to the airport and your destination, and then you have to lug them from there to wherever you're heading next, and it might not even be where you're playing golf while you're there. ShipStix takes all of the hassle out of that. They will find for you the best, cheapest, most affordable route to get your clubs from where they are, whether that's your home, your office, your golf club, or somewhere else, to wherever they need to be, directly to the golf course, directly to where you're staying, and it's taking out of all of that the hassle of getting your clubs from where they land to where they need to be. So head over to ShipStix.com/GNN to get a 20% discount you can claim right now on domestic shipping. ShipStix.com/GNN, and you're going to save 20% on your domestic shipping. And that shipping starts as little as $39 each way. And you can also have it done in as quickly as one business day if you're willing to pay a little premium for it. And either way, no matter the shipping you choose with ShipStix, you know that your golf clubs are in great hands and you're going to have a hassle-free experience. Again, ShipStix.com/GNN. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit as Tiger's kind of making his way up the leaderboard by virtue of pars at the Honda Classic. It is brutal out there at PGA National. I wanted to talk a little bit about the reinvigoration of the golf ball debate. I don't want to spend lots of time on it because we've spent time on it in the past, but just to kind of sum things up, Jack Nicklaus was talking at the Honda Classic, and Steve Elling, formerly of CBS Sports, formerly of Sportsline, just a great writer and a good man, he asked Jack Nicklaus about slow play. And that question about slow play precipitated an answer from Nicklaus on golf balls, and particularly on golf ball distance. And he wanted to say, Nicklaus did, that slow play was related to how far the golf ball travels, because he believes with golf courses needing to be longer for an accommodation of modern technology, that it literally takes longer because you have more ground to cover. I'm not sure that I buy that argument, and we can evaluate that. But the news-making part to me was that Nicklaus said he had had dinner with USGA Executive Director / CEO Mike Davis, and that Davis basically said, we're going to get there. We're going to get something done to Jack Nicklaus about golf ball distance. Now, he said, Davis, that the RNA was holding things up. The RNA would tell you, sources there, that the USGA is kind of holding things up. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, a lot of big egos to deal with, or potentially rolling back the golf ball. And the suggestion was from Nicklaus that he would like to see a 20% rollback in golf ball distance from the current ball, and that would basically allow them to preserve basically all of Jack Nicklaus's portfolio of golf course designs, but also most of the championship tests that we've come to know and expect over the last 40 or 50 years, and the big ones that have the money to be able to, or have been able to renovate and expand to be able to kind of change where bunkers and where tee spots are so that they could accommodate and still challenge players of the best level, but also still keep their membership happy. And he said that Nicklaus did that. There's really only one golf course in the country that can't become obsolete, and that's Augusta National, because they can pretty much buy whatever land they need to buy, which they've kind of already done, and they can then alter the golf course accordingly, which, I mean, he's kind of right, but still, it's sad that it would have to come to that. And so that started this uproar, again, about reining back in the golf ball. And I kind of read the tea leaves based on what Nicholas said, Davis said, what Nicholas's view is, and how they seem to be of one of the same mind, that a year ago, Mike Davis kind of gave away his position. That it wasn't a complete ball rollback. It wasn't a ball rollback for just pros and high-level amateurs, and nothing for the regular player. That it would more than likely be a quote-unquote voluntary rollback, where the USGA and the RNA wouldn't say, okay, you all have to roll back, all the equipment manufacturers have to roll back how far the golf ball goes. We're going to roll back our standard by 20%. And so the golf ball can only fly 80% of what's currently allowed. And good luck with that. And every player has to deal with the ramifications of that. That's not going to be the case. And they're not going to come up with a situation where they say, all right, well, we're going to take the modern ball and leave that for every recreational player. And then for the professional and the high-level amateur, we're going to create a different set of regulations, a different set of equipment regulations, and we'll contend with that. So they don't want to do bifurcation. The USGA and the RNA are vehemently opposed to having two different sets of rules, and frankly, there are lots of golfers who are opposed to having two different sets of rules. Recreational players want to play the same style game, even though it is completely different, in fact, if not in spirit, than what the professionals do every week. We're not going to hit drives 361 yards without hitting the cart path, most of us. And if we did, it would have to be on absolute rock-hard fairways. So we don't play the same game as most professionals do, most high-level professionals do. We don't have access to the same equipment. We have the components, the prototype balls, the special balls, stuff that's designed just for players, special putters, all kinds of stuff that's designed for tour players to perform at their absolute best so that these OEMs can vouch for them and talk about them and market them because they're the best players in the world. We don't play that game of golf. We get a certain subset of equipment that's mass-produced. It's very good, but it's different. A lot of it is not custom fit, even though it should be, and there aren't a lot of things that are made just for you and me. Very few. Maybe bag tags. That's about it. So we play a different game, but they're not willing to go so far as in the rules of golf and in the equipment regulations the USGA and the RNA produce. They're not willing to go far enough to say, we have two different games. They're just not willing to do that. So they see as the middle ground the possibility that we could offer the option for tournament directors and for governing bodies and for organizations like that to offer a limited flight option and require their participants to use it. And that would imagine a scenario where the Masters could then feel empowered to say, we are Augusta National, we are the home of the Masters, this is the major everyone wants to win, so if you want to win our major, you're going to play a golf ball that goes 80% as far. End of story. All your other equipment can stay the same, but the golf ball's got to change. And if you don't want to do that, you can't play in the Masters. And if you're an equipment manufacturer and you don't want to make that limited flight golf ball, but your staffers want to play in the Masters, well, they're going to play someone else's golf ball. So you probably should make theirs. That's going to, I think, be the way this goes. And, of course, there's a fear about a lawsuit. You know, there's a lot of talk about that. You know, the USGA and the RNA are afraid of getting sued by Titleist and Acushnet. And frankly, they're really the only potential party to a lawsuit that would really care all that much. Maybe Callaway, because their ball share is increasing. If you look at everybody else, you look at the Bridgestones, TaylorMade, Srixons, Snell Golfs, I mean, go down the line of good golf ball makers, but they don't have enough market share to really make it that big of a deal if they had to change. I mean, it would be a big deal, don't get me wrong, but it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Versus for Acushnet and Titleist, which owns an overwhelming portion of plurality, if not an outright majority, of the golf ball market, it's a majority of the golf ball market, then, you know, for them, saying you have to change everything that you make, it sounds, that, you know, to still be able to live by that promise of we're the number one ball in golf, or you have to bifurcate and you can't use the number one ball in golf anymore because there's a number one ball for pros, there's number one ball for recreational players, it would just mess everything up, messes up their business. It's just, they view it as a shot across the bow at them. And so Titleist, every time this argument comes back up, they kind of engage in an obfuscation campaign. And they do this in a variety of ways with their professionals, with their staffers, with the people that represent them in television and radio. And they try to present it, again, by obfuscating what's happening here. They're trying to present it as the USGA and the RNA are going to roll back the golf ball, and they're going to affect you, and you're going to hit it 20% shorter. So if you hit the ball 260 off the tee, you're suddenly going to hit it 208. How do you feel about that? Well, most recreational golfers would hate that idea. No one wants to hit a drive 208 yards. And I understand that and completely recognize that. I hit a golf ball a reasonable long way. I don't want that to go away. I just don't. I like being able to potentially hit it 300 yards sometimes. So I believe in the bifurcation of golf equipment because I think recreational players are completely different. We're just trying to have fun. And we should be able to play, frankly, with whatever the hell we want to play with. And if that means we're hitting balls 400 yards, all right, whatever. But it doesn't mean you can putt or chip or anything like that. It's a tough game. But for a professional, if you're going to play championship-level golf, you need to be able to execute every kind of shot. And you need to be able to not just bomb it over everything that a potential championship test offers. And there are only so many legitimate championship tests that are capable of standing up to the best in the world. So the thought being that we need to preserve those and need to make them not hardened, but they need to be able to withstand the test of time and equipment. And if we do, we roll back the golf ball by 20%, if you take Dustin Johnson's 330-yard drive and reduce it by 66 yards, all of a sudden, a lot of golf courses seem pretty manageable. And obviously, there's going to be a pushback from a titleist. But if the USGA and RNA go through with something like this, then they feel like they've got the legal ground to stand on, and they're probably not going to get sued. These manufacturers are going to have to deal with it. And I think that by what they're trying to come up with in terms of this voluntary rollback, they're taking away the possibility of a lawsuit because they're not saying we're changing the rules. They're saying we're empowering other people, tournament directors, tournament organizers, governing bodies, etc., faux governing bodies, etc., to be able to offer a limited flight golf ball. So you can sue them if you want. You can sue Augusta National if you want. That's not a good look. That's not, USGA and RNA are frankly easy soft targets. Their approval ratings are just not high. But Augusta National's approval rating, if you did a Q rating on them, be through the roof. Everyone loves Augusta National. Even the people that are in kind of my part of the political spectrum, they're a little bit more progressive, a little bit more liberal. Even they're willing to gloss over the fact that Augusta National isn't exactly the most inclusive place in the world, but it is an incredible place that puts on an incredible golf tournament, and they have liberalized in recent years in some respects. So even then, even among that group of golfers, those people would be like, what are you doing suing Augusta National? So they're trying to create this perfect storm where basically a Kushnet would feel so frozen they would just have to deal with it, and that they would leave it up to themselves and their major championships they run, as well the Masters and the PGA of America, to decide what they want to do. And they would effectively kind of create even more like tennis situations where instead of having different court types, you'd have different ball types that you'd have to win majors with, which seems very weird to me. Frankly, I'm not in favor of this. I don't like the idea of telling certain tournaments that they can have certain rollbacks and that a golfer has to learn how to hit a 70% ball, 80% ball, 90% ball, 100% ball, and it's got to change by the week. I just don't think that's plausible. I don't. It's a tremendous cost to the manufacturers, and I would actually believe that the OEMs would have a point in a lawsuit to say, you're telling us that we can't do this, this, and this while we have all these business agreements with these players, and we have to basically sink even more money into that just to be able to let them play with our equipment while wearing our logo on TV in your tournament or this tournament or that tournament. I think it would be a pretty decent legal argument. I don't know where it would lead, but probably be a lengthy one, and it would probably cost a lot of money on both sides. Just remember, Vijay Singh is still suing the PGA Tour 5 years later. He has incurred a lot of legal costs, and there have been a lot of motions filed back and forth with basically no progress other than someday there's going to be a trial if there's not a settlement, and we don't know when that's going to actually be. So imagine this case taking longer than that one. It would go on for years. So if you start the process now, maybe by the mid-2020s, we would have this option on the table for a limited flight golf ball. My view is if we're going to do this, we're going to do it one time, not varying degrees. We're going to do it one time for professionals and high amateurs only. Everyone else gets to use the golf balls they currently use. They can use the limited flight ones if they want. Kind of dumb, but all right, you can. And that's it. And then you've kind of got from the word from Acushnet is, well, that's not what's going to happen. Everyone's going to roll back. They're going to roll back for everybody. And they try to sow this discord among golfers with them and the USGA and the RNA that they're not looking out for the sport, and that, you know, everything has changed in golf in the last 20 years. And don't get me wrong, a lot of things have changed in golf in the last 17 years, other than a solid core golf ball, which was really Nike and Titleist kind of going together at once, but Titleist obviously popularized it with the Pro V1. And other things have changed. Components are better. Every component of your golf club is better than it used to be. It's more customizable. It has better mass properties. It does everything better. Agronomy is better. The PGA Tour can keep fairways fiery fast and can have greens that are fast but receptive. They can do the opposite. They can do it every week with every grass type at any time. They're amazing. They're fantastic in what they do. And all of those things combine with a better athlete, a golfer that can swing faster because of better components, that trains better for golf, that has a better understanding of the golf swing because of TrackMan and other launch monitor products, K-Vest, V1, go down the line. We understand the golf swing better than we ever have, at least in concept. Maybe not in teaching, but at least in concept than we ever have. And there are still some debates about that, but a lot of facts are known. And because of all of those things, golfers perform better. So the argument goes from variety of people who are anti-rollback, well, you can't change any of those things. Why aren't you changing those? Well, we all go back to hickory shafts and really hard persimmon heads, and we all have to wear knickers, and we play a feathery. And that is, of course, a kind of whataboutism argument. Like, what about this? What about this? What about this? I believe that Mike Davis and the USGA and Martin Slumbers and the RNA, who seem to be kind of telegraphing what they're going to do, that something's going to happen. I think they believe that if you just change the golf ball, which is the one thing that is relevant to every shot, as Titleist likes to say, is one thing relevant to every shot, then if you do that, you can effectively kind of mitigate all the other advances. And that over time, you'll get some creep back again, I would imagine. You would get creep back one at a time. And there will be the next other innovation that changes golf balls forever, and all of a sudden they'll have to roll that back. Graphene's going to come along and become really relevant to golf balls. Graphene's going to be really relevant to your driver head. It's going to replace carbon fiber in a few years. It's going to be in your driver shafts. It's probably going to be somehow integrated into club head design for irons. It's just all. There's so much coming in terms of material innovation that's going to change that the USGA and the RNA simply cannot account for right now and don't fully understand, or even if they do, they don't have a position on it yet. And that's coming, and we're going to have to deal with that someday. And I guess their worldview, and I believe it is the correct one, is that we can't build bigger golf courses. Water bills are through the roof. Water is becoming more expensive. Important real estate is becoming more expensive. Maintaining properties are more expensive. People are moving away from golf courses and into urban environments. All of this stuff impacts golf courses, golf course development. But none of those factors seem to really impact golf product manufacturing. So they feel like if they can affect one end, then they can salvage the other. And instead of trying to build new, bigger ballparks or blow up existing great cathedrals of golf to accommodate modern technology, they want to go the other way. I think it is a fascinating argument. I have no idea how it's going to work out. But as someone who is a proponent, at least in concept of the rollback, I can understand the logistical and physical problems of actually trying to implement something like this. And that's why I fear that if they actually do something, they're going to screw it up. All right, let's talk a little bit about our friends at Health IQ. We've been telling you about them for the first couple of months of this year, and we're happy to work with them. Health IQ is basically the life insurance equivalent of car insurance. When you shop for car insurance, you try to get the best rates possible, and you try to get the best rates possible with a great driving record that avoids accidents, avoids tickets, and other problems. Well, like what you do with car insurance, Health IQ is an insurance company that helps health-conscious people, like walking golfers, you should be walking, runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegetarians, people who go to the gym and can verify it, get lower rates on life insurance because you're treating your body like you do your car. You don't want it to get in a wreck. You don't want it to get a ticket. So you treat your body like you should, and therefore you should be rewarded with lower life insurance rates. And Health IQ helps 56% of their customers save anywhere from 4 to 33% on their life insurance. And they can do that because physically active people are just healthier and they cost less to insure. They have a 56% lower risk of health disease. They have a 20% lower risk of cancer, a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. And so they can take that verifiable, real information to their exclusive rate partners, companies like John Hancock and other great term life insurers, and 70% of Health IQ's clients get approved at the top rate class. That's going to save you a lot of money. It allows you to buy a better package, longer term, higher valuable insurance policy, or you can just simply pay less, whatever you want to do. But you can get a better plan that either save you money or offer more benefit. And that's just fantastic. That's exactly what you should be doing. So head over to healthiq.com/19 for more information and to see if you qualify. Again, healthiq.com/19. All right, let's get back into the second half of the show. I'm trying to do about a 30-minute show this week, but I did want to talk about the Honda Classic because I found some intrigue here in the lead-up into this tournament, and part of it came from Riviera last week where Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy, who were paired with Tiger Woods for the first two rounds at Riviera, they both spoke separately after the fact about fan behavior and that they were shocked and appalled by what they heard from fans of Tiger Woods' galleries. Rory McIlroy said he believes that Tiger Woods has basically been penalized a half shot or two per round or two shots per tournament for his entire career because of the size of his galleries and how they act. And they scream a lot, and they move after Tiger hits, so they disrespect other players because they don't really care about them. They go to the next hole, they shout weird things. I mean, it's just a different atmosphere playing with Tiger Woods or being in his gallery than playing with someone else on the PGA Tour and not being in Tiger Woods' gallery. Justin Thomas said that he finds the fan experience, I guess, or the fan response not very good, and that's disappointing to him, and that so many things are happening that kind of distract the players, and it's not going very well, and maybe something needs to be done about it. And then you have at PGA National this week, the tournament organizers from the Honda Classic have tried to kind of cultivate this atmosphere at their 17th hole, par 3, the end of the bear trap, 15, 16, 17 on the Champion Course. They've tried to cultivate this atmosphere similar, the Florida version of the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale, which also got a negative reaction this year from the players in a lot of instances. And I haven't heard that really maybe ever, but certainly in a long time. And the reaction was that the kind of gentle poking of fun that happened there in prior years, it kind of turned aggressive and turned mean. And instead of gentle heckling, it was just downright rooting against somebody or booing somebody or treating someone poorly. And they didn't like that. They didn't want that to be the atmosphere where they were playing golf in the most fun golf tournament of the year. And that pushback, I think, kind of resonated a little bit with some of the fans. And frankly, it wasn't just a one-year thing. I mean, there have been other years where that stuff has happened. And I think that the Thunderbirds have tried to curtail that a little bit. But the vibe in Arizona is completely different than South Florida. I mean, the vibe in Arizona is pretty chill, laid back. Most of the people who are there are just kind of casual fans. They're there because it's a social event. They're not there for the golf tournament. They're there to drink and kind of have mellow fun and then kind of regret their life decisions later as they wait in an hour and a half long Uber line to get out of TPC Scottsdale. But that's not the reality of the Honda Classic. Florida golf bros and Florida golf C-suite type people or C-level type people, they're not like that. They're a little bit more aggressive. They can be downright mean and nasty, and they can kind of root for failure. And that's been the feedback from the players and, frankly, some of the fans and some of the media. And there was this worry that this week could be a bad look for for the tournament if 17 turns into an ugly atmosphere. And there's always carnage there. There's bad weather the first couple of days. The scoring is high. Most of the notable names are in trouble other than Tiger Woods. I mean, JT's a part of things, and Daniel Berger is, and so is Tiger. But Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy had bad weeks. Ricky definitely missed the cut. Had a horrible front nine on Friday and shot himself into the ocean. But I'm wondering how it's going to work out this weekend, especially if Tiger remains in contention, especially into Sunday. What's it going to be like? Because most of the people who are going to be there are going to root for a Tiger Woods victory. I'm going to be one of them. I'm not going to be there, but I would root for a Tiger Woods victory if I were a fan because of the potential monumental nature of it. I mean, it'd be PGA Tour win 80. It'd be his first win in 5 years, and almost 5 years. It would be a huge deal, huge for our sport, to have, quote-unquote, Tiger back. So those fans would know that. They would root against every single player that came through 15, 16, 17, and 18, hoping they would find the water, hoping they would find disaster, and the Tiger wouldn't. And that would make it a little bit easier for him to get to the finish line and win for the 80th time on the PGA Tour. If that's what happens, that's going to be a really bad look for the Honda Classic. It's going to look horrible on TV, and it's not going to go well. And I don't care that CBS is broadcasting the tournament, NBC's not, for Olympic reasons. So NBC typically has a dedicated channel. They basically turn Golf Channel into the Bear Trap channel, and they spend most of their coverage window showing guys just hitting in the water in the Bear Trap. I don't know what CBS is going to do broadcasting that tournament, but if that's the case, then and they focus on the Bear Trap, it's going to look bad. It's going to come across poorly on TV. I don't think the tour wants that, obviously. I don't think the people at the Honda Classic want that. They want to toe a fine line here between something rowdy and interesting and crowd-pleasing and just downright debauchery and meanness. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. But I think most people are going to be pulling for Tiger. Again, if this all continues, and of course by the time you might listen to this later in the weekend, that might be a moot point. But I just worry that there's been this kind of ramping up of trying to appeal to millennials and younger people. And I don't mean this as an indictment of millennials, because they're just people. But younger people in general are bigger dicks. I mean, I know that from personal experience. I was probably more recently a young person than a lot of you, and I have probably been a dick more recently than you, just because that's how people under 40 kind of act, that it happens sometimes, and they're among the best of us that we do that. And by trying to cultivate younger and younger fans, you're cultivating fans who may not have the same kind of experience going to golf tournaments. They might not know how to handle their liquor. They might not know how to handle themselves in this kind of awkward social situation, this construct of a golf tournament. So they lash out and they act differently how they would want to act in a bar or another social event where maybe that's kind of acceptable, but not a golf tournament. And then they think that's cool and that's okay, because the golf tournament's like, yes, young people, we're so happy you're here. We're not going to kick you out. Let's not worry about that. Let's cater to you instead. And the end result may not be as desired. And so we're just going to have to see this play out over the next couple of weeks, maybe over the remainder of the season, to get a sense of whether these players feel like the fan experience for them, you know, whether their interaction with fans is worse or better, or where it's at. But it's something curious to look at, and a story worth following. So next week on the show, we're going to talk about Tiger Woods. Hopefully something really interesting happens, and we have plenty to talk about relating to Tiger. And then in 2 weeks, I'm going to Orlando, Florida for my annual golf trip, the Greensburg Cup. I'm super excited about that. And we're just going to have a great time at Reunion Resort. Hopefully record a podcast. It may be completely drunk. Might be more likely a Periscope than anything else. A couple Periscopes at night. Some moonshine. A lot of Yeti riding in pools. A lot of golf. A lot of sunburn / suntan. Lots of fun coming up. And speaking of that kind of fun, maybe not to that extreme, but we're going to have our first ever GNN audience trip in August at the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship. We're so excited about it. We hope you will join us. It's the end of August. It's me and Mitch Lawrence. We're going to play 5 rounds of golf, 4 in the tournament, a 5th one as well, that you'll get complimentary. your entry fee is $525, and that's going to be fantastic. That saves you a little bit of money. And you can also get a package with us for $1,175 to stay at the Sheraton at the Myrtle Beach Convention Center. And there they have each night the world's largest 19th hole with open bar, hors d'oeuvres, prizes. You get a $300 participant gift bag. The value that you get by participating in this thing is outrageously awesome. And then each night, we're going to go out and have some fun at Myrtle Beach. Hit the bars, hit the restaurants, mini golf, all that good stuff. So you should come with us. And if you don't, I'm very disappointed in you. Just kidding. But if you head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam, you can find out more information. thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. Or if you have questions about the whole thing, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Hit me up on Twitter, @RyanValenge. Be happy to answer your questions, anything that you want to know about that, or anything else for that matter. So until next week, I'm Ryan Valenge. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for your support. And we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.